Andrew, just last night I met a partner who was flexing his Solana Mobile Saga, and in his phone he then showed me Converse, which was built with XMT. So it was cool to see like both our products merged together over there. But let's talk about this Saga. It's so cool. I'm really curious, like how hard is it to launch your own device today? How hard was it for you guys?
Well, I think it's very difficult, but thankfully we didn't have to do the hard parts. So that's the sort of awesome, one of the awesome parts of this whole endeavor is that Anatoly, the CEO, obviously, got connected with Jason Keats, who's the CEO of Awesome. And Awesome, OSOM, they're a number of employees who were formerly with Essential, Andy Rubin's Android startup. And it's interesting because they had the Essential phone, which was really good, but had some sort of key limitations, and just didn't perform well in the market and stuff. And ultimately, many of the employees of Awesome wanted to keep building phones, so Jason Keats started this company. And these are all like just hardware phone experts. Like Keats has like done hardware, development for like Apple products and all sorts of stuff. I mean, these guys just know what they're doing, and they know the industry. So they had started putting together what ultimately became the Saga, and they were looking for a company to partner with. And ultimately, Anatoly and Jason Keats got connected, and Anatoly had this vision of bringing this Web3 phone, and that was the sort of vision and partnership that Awesome was looking for. I think in a lot of ways, trying something new, something that hadn't been done before. And so here we are. So all of the really, really hard stuff around, like just everything that is involved in putting together a phone, they are experts. They know what they're doing. They know how to, move it through the process and all that sort of stuff. And so we just got to think about, some sort of like key pieces of software, which I think we can talk about, and other things, and just sort of partnering with them on
That's very interesting. There's so many directions we can go right now, but
that.
I'm really curious, what's the timeline where this idea came about, Solana Mobile, and how did you guys get in touch with Awesome? What happened over there?
Yes. So I believe. Well, so Anatoly, again, he is formerly at Qualcomm. He was formerly at Qualcomm, worked at Qualcomm for many years, and apparently, he knew people who worked on like parts of the processor that were in the Saga, right? And so, what's interesting too is that this is an aside. I'll try not to talk about this for too long, but like even to this day, I don't really understand how Solana works and like how the whole proof of history. But what I do understand is that like. What Solana is trying to solve, what every blockchain is trying to solve, is this idea of shared state, right? Like you need to have independent computers all agreeing on what is the state of the network, and when you, and making it public and open. And when you have that, you can build lots of cool things on top of it, right? And so there's various ways to solve that problem. But what's interesting is that that problem has been solved by other industries. And one of those industries is the cell phone industry, because in effect, what you have with the cell phone networks is a global shared state. Like when you're on your phone talking to a cell tower, you need to be able to move between cell towers and to be able to, have whatever state you're connected to now, whatever state you have, to be able to be moved between these, any number of cell towers. And then there's, like signals and signal loss and all sorts of stuff. So the best way that I understand Solana is that. The light bulb moment for Anatoly was that he realized that this idea of shared state had sort of been solved by the cellular industry, and then there was an analog that could be brought to a blockchain platform. I hope I'm not butchering it. If anybody understands Solana better than me, who sees this, I hope they'll correct me, but that's how I understand it. So it's kind of, an analog to the way cell towers work. Anyway, so all this is to say Anatoly has this in his mind. He knows people, he knows the processors and stuff at Qualcomm, and it sounds like Breakpoint 2021. It was August or September, between August and November. I don't remember when in 2021. I was not there. That's sort of when this idea of like, well, hey, what if we, built a phone that was, had, Anatoly understood like the trust zone, the trusted execution environment for like building secure key storage, stuff like that, secure seed storage. And so, yeah, I think the idea sort of crystallized in Anatoly's head in August, or Breakpoint 2021, late 2021. And then I think things moved fairly quickly. And within, I think by early 2022, the agreements and everything had been signed with Awesome, and they were getting started. Awesome already had the hardware, like it was mostly baked. And then they started building the team. And so our fearless leader, Stephen Laver, who you may or may not know, he's the brains behind a large portion of what we have now in the Solana stack, Solana Mobile stack. And I joined in June 2022. So that was, I'm coming up on a year now. So, pretty recent.
Definitely. Over here in Web3, a lot of things are happening just in the past few years. But that is very interesting. I'm curious, like, what does having a device that is built from the ground up to serve Solana ecosystem, how does that change? What difference does that make in the ecosystem?
I mean, you know, the way we sort of have talked about the Saga and the SMS stack is that it's an opinion. It's a line in the sand. We're saying there are key pain points that exist when doing crypto on mobile. And anybody who's done crypto on mobile can understand, right? It's a patchwork of apps and wallets with web views and websites. And, you know, it's like everybody's kind of trying to figure these things out. And there are key things that if we solve them, you can now sort of start from that line in the sand and start building out this ecosystem and start building out an ecosystem. And you're seeing that because, you know, the Saga does not have huge reach today. You know, it just started shipping. But already people are super, super excited to, you know, get their apps on our dApp store, even though there's like not many users right now. We hope there will be a lot of users. But, you know, it's just like, because, you know, it's this ecosystem, it's this platform, a lot of these problems have been solved and we can get into all the, you know, things that we're solving with it, or attempting to solve. But it's just like, I think what you're seeing is you're seeing the industry was ready. Our industry was ready for something like this. It was ready for a place that maybe we could call home and say, you know, we're going to make these mobile apps available and they're going to be able to do this that maybe they couldn't, because hanging over everybody's head is Google Play and the Apple App Store, right? There are many, many apps that people would want to develop that would just not get approved by Apple. And I think there are maybe some more that would get approved by Google, but there are also many, many crypto apps that would not get approved by Google. So that specter of like, I want to launch a mobile platform in crypto, but not even knowing if you can release it to users is hugely frustrating, you know? You're seeing people just ready for a place they can call home, I think is what, you know, I'm seeing.
I think so many things are coming together right now. Just last weekend, I was talking to my friend who works at Microsoft, who always had this big tech life. And now he's like, hey, I want to try building something in AI right now. So he builds an app and then he submits to Apple Store. And then Apple Store, these guys don't give him a clear definition, clear guidelines. They keep banning. They keep like taking a lot of time with no proper guidelines. And he's just mad.
Yep.
And now I'm like, hey, what do you think of crypto now?
Yeah.
And now he's getting convinced. Now he's like, okay, now it makes a lot of sense. What do you guys mean when you say permissionless?
Yeah.
What do you guys are talking about when you say there's no gatekeeping? So he understands that now.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. But another thing I think which is super important that I'm also seeing right now is the concept of patchwork. A lot of technologies are built on the Web2 fundamentals. And with Web3, you're just trying to somehow make it work. And then you are just doing so many workarounds. You're having performance issues and stuff like that. So we definitely need foundations built from the ground up with Web3 so that it's easier for people to deploy, it's easier for people to distribute.
Yes, 100%. I could talk a lot about all that.
let's dive into that. I definitely want to dive more into the early story. Like, let's say when you joined in June 2022, what was happening? Like, what were the stories that you were hearing from the community, from the ecosystem?
Yeah, you know, boy, what I can tell you, so this is interesting, like, there is, even to this day, and there was, I would say more so mid last year, a severe lack of discussion around mobile in crypto. You know what I mean? So I've been an Android app developer for 10 years. And so, you know, my bias is towards Android apps and my bias is towards awesome on-device experiences. But then, you know, I would come to crypto and it's like, it's just not even on the radar. People just aren't even talking about it. You know, they're talking about the next blockchain or whatever. And, you know, so you would find people sort of having discussions like, oh, well, it'd be great if we could do this on mobile. It'd be great if we could build these things. I just think the cold start problem was there. Like, there's no, you know, formality. There's no guarantee you can get released. What I was seeing in like June was like, it was almost like people were kind of waking up to this idea of like, mobile. It's like, you know, it's funny because like, you know, in 2017, I had a tweet conversation with Dapper Labs during the CryptoPunks era. And like, you know, MetaMask was a very weird concept back then. That was just 2017. And, you know, now it's just sort of like a given, right? Like, you know, if you're in Web3, you're going to have MetaMask. It's amazing how quickly things can just become the way they are. So it's like, oh, well, you know, we have our mobile wallet. And you just go into a web view and stuff like that. And people just don't necessarily question it, you know? And it's like, well, no, what if we can do better? You know? And so I feel like what you found is that people were kind of just starting to wake up to this idea and like being like, well, oh yeah. I mean, like I'm on my phone all the time. Obviously I want my crypto apps there. You know, what if we actually can solve it? And you know, there were teams that were wanting to and thinking about mobile apps, but just kind of hadn't gotten started. So again, it really was kind of the start. Like that gave people the motivation to start. Who otherwise wouldn't, you know? I think maybe teams that were already building and were already ready for this were some of like your games, you know, like there are Web3 games that are on the Play Store. And they were already like, obviously we're gonna do mobile, right? Like they already knew it, but it was the rest of the industry that kind of needed to play catch up.
Very interesting. I'm actually now also curious that how does the entire manufacturing area work? Is everything outsourced to Awesome? Is Awesome just building the technology and manufacturing is taken care of someone else, or are they doing everything end to end?
They're just facilitating all the actual hardware production logistics. So they know how to make all that happen. It, ultimately, like I think we are handling like the sales logistics. Like we have a team that's in charge of that. So I think Awesome takes care of like everything, you know, through the factory experience, and then ultimately it gets sort of sent to us, if you will, to be shipped out to people. So there's like logistics company and stuff like that. We're not like, you know, running a warehouse or anything. We're working with like a logistics company.
Makes sense. Yeah. This is an idea that I was sharing with a lot of my friends, which is basically that Apple today has built such a good device, and Apple today has also figured out the entire logistics, the entire manufacturing capabilities. What if we can decentralize that? What if anyone who has an idea of a smartphone, they can tap into this ecosystem of manufacturing logistics and they can build their own? And this is really cool that you guys have actually found the perfect player to be able to do that.
You know, that's a really interesting idea because like, you know, phones, you know, there are teams that are like building open source phones, like PinePhone, for example, is a really interesting project. There's a couple more that I've seen where it's like, you know, basically, you know, in a way, like it seems like phones have kind of been commodified. Like, you know, you can just, there's just like off the shelf components that you can sort of like put together and stuff like that. But knowing the ins and outs of like actually moving it through the, actual production process and stuff, that takes somebody with experience, someone like Jason Keats and his Awesome team, right? But, you know, one of the things that people ask us a lot is like, well, is the seed vault on the Saga, which is the you know, secure seed storage that runs in the trusted execution environment. They're like, is that going to be open sourced? And the answer we give is unfortunately, no. We are open sourcing as much as we can of the Solana mobile stack, but we cannot open source the seed vault because there are sort of like NDA type arrangements that hardware manufacturers have to get with Qualcomm, for example. Like, you know, Qualcomm, it's licensed, you know, the processor's licensed, and I'm sure there's potentially, or there is proprietary information about the processor that is published when you end up working with such a processor. So we literally can't publish the seed vault source code because of NDAs and things like that. But you could imagine a situation or a scenario where, you know, like a DAO, for example, wanted to, you know, facilitate a phone. And there are, I think, more like open chipsets out there, like, or, you know, less licensed chipsets, Allwinner, other things. Like, you know, you sort of see these like budget phones, right? So you theoretically could imagine pulling together like a number of people who understand the industry and kind of know all these pieces who could facilitate building their own phone, you know, and then have the seed vault on it, you know, and open source that code because they're in control of the, you know, the licensing and stuff like that. Like it's very possible. I remember I heard a podcast about like, you know, DeSci or decentralized science. It definitely seems like something that could be done. It'd be cool to see, honestly.
Definitely. I think this is a very interesting space. In DeSci, there is Research Hub, I believe, or Nano Hub. I think it's Research Hub. And they are doing something really cool where it's like, hey, earlier, there, like scientists, researchers had to go through such a long process just to get their paper out, and then even to view that paper, to read that paper, everybody has to pay. Like there's a huge paywall for it. That doesn't make sense. That means that the information cannot be read, cannot be used by people down the road. And also the process of licensing that particular research, that is so difficult. So with Research Hub, they're doing that, hey, just put your ideas out there and also make licensing super easy so that we can actually, people have a really good incentive to throw their ideas out there. Because of the current system of patent and stuff, people are trying to not give their ideas out easily. Yep. They are trying to reserve it to themselves. So yeah, it just shifts the mindset.
Yeah, people have, on a much simpler level, there's sort of been conversation, people have toyed around with the idea of like a case DAO for the Saga. So like pulling together people who can like pool funds to build, you know, to produce cases for the Saga. Because, you know, like the cost barrier for spaces is much, much lower. So like theoretically, you could have a scenario where like you sort of crowdfund production of a case and multiple cases or something like that. Hasn't happened yet, but if anyone wants to do it, I'm here for it.
Perfect. That makes sense. A very good example right now to see is MoonDAO. MoonDAO is basically getting people on the moon. They just gave like 2 free tickets to Blue Origin space flight where you get to spend 12 minutes.
I haven't heard about that.
That's really cool. That's a really good inspiration for KSTOW or PhoneDAO.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
But let's get into now the key features of Solana Mobile. So you mentioned a seed vault. Yep. What are the other things that people are looking at here?
Yeah, so the big things, the big pieces of the SMS stack that we, you know, that we wanted to bring to the table and that we think solve problems is the seed vault, the mobile wallet adapter, and then the dApp store. Those are the 3 big ones. So the seed vault is, as I've said, it's secure seed storage that runs in the trusted execution environment on the phone. Like an example of other uses of the trusted execution environment is where like all your fingerprints go. It's what keeps your fingerprints secure when you're, you know, doing biometric authentication. And so it's a fully custom software product, in effect, that's built using very particular SDKs. And so what happens is your seed phrase goes into the seed vault and doesn't leave, never leaks. The analog to the seed vault is the seed vault SDK. That's the other part of the stack. That's very important. The seed vault SDK is what allows wallets to interface with the seed vault. And so in effect, when you're interacting with the seed vault, unsigned transaction bytes go in and signed transaction bytes go out. Your seed phrase is never exposed to anyone. No app on the phone can get access to that seed phrase. It is only in the seed vault. Like I say, it can't come out. All it can do is take bytes in for signing, send bytes out that have been signed. And so, you know, a very painful event for the Solana ecosystem was the Slope wallet hack. I don't know if you heard about that.
No.
Okay, well, it was painful. Basically, what had happened is Slope wallet had been leaking seed phrases to their like analytics provider or something like that. Literally, plain text seed phrases being leaked into the cloud.
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah, that was a rough day. That was a rough day. That can't happen with Seed Vault. Just can't happen. You will never have your seed vault leave the seed. Your seed phrase leave the seed vault. So again, you know, the solution that it's solving is when you are interacting with crypto on your phone, that seed phrase is very important. You need to keep it secure. And if it's only stored encrypted, you know, on the disk, if you will, which is what most wallets are doing, there is a risk. At some point, that encrypted data has to be decrypted and brought into system memory. So there is a risk. There's always that risk of that seed phrase getting leaked somehow, right? And I mean, the wallet, you know, developers are very good. It is very secure, right? It's, but then things like Slope Wallet can't happen. So, you know, this is just an added layer of security that says, you know, we want to make sure your seed phrase just really is in a safe place. And so the seed vault, like I said, the seed vault SDK is how wallets can communicate with the seed vault. What's interesting is like when you are interacting directly with the seed vault, like configuring it or something like that, it actually takes over the screen. It actually draws to the screen separate from Android itself. It's like its own, I guess, you know, or like mini operating system. And so it can't be screenshotted, can't be tampered with, whatever. So like if you ever see a screen recording of people signing with the seed vault, like the screen kind of just freezes. Like you can't see them doing that because you cannot screen record the seed vault. So that's pretty cool. So then the next piece is a mobile wallet adapter, which, you know, right now, if you go to any Web3 website on any blockchain, there's like that connect button, right? And that's what connects the website to your whatever wallet you're using. And, you know, what makes that connection on the web is like a JavaScript library that is like an adapter or a connector that connects the website to the wallet. And so it's, that's sort of like a key piece of Web3. Like everything in Web3 depends on those connector libraries or adapter libraries. The mobile wallet adapter is the same idea applied to mobile. So the idea is that what we want is we want to build a world where on-device dApps don't have to have their own internal wallets because they are, then you run the same risks, right? Like they can then they're the ones managing your seed phrase or your private keys and then they can leak it. And we want to avoid that. So what we want to say is we want to let wallets do wallet things like signing transactions, and we want dApps to do fun other things. And so mobile wallet adapter is a way for on-device dApps to connect to on-device wallets. So you can choose which wallet you want to use for doing your transaction signing and other things. And so, you know, like if you're thinking about building a consumer crypto experience, you now don't have to think about doing wallet stuff. You can just say, hey, let's connect to a wallet. And there are, you know, there are user experience and sort of, again, other cold start barriers that can exist there. But the idea is that in a crypto world, people are going to have wallets, and then now you can start downloading apps onto the onto your phone that interact with those wallets. Final piece of software is the dApp Store. It's our feeless, permissionless, dApp Store. When you publish dApps with our tooling, you end up, you're actually minting them as NFTs on chain. And then you sort of submit them for whitelisting into our dApp Store. The best way to think of the dApp Store is kind of like, it's just like a big whitelisted catalog of on-chain apps. Like, we want to say, like, these are safe, these are good actors. You can come to our dApp Store and know that they're safe, but we're you know, all of the restrictions around crypto and stuff like that are gone, you know, and we're thinking about, you know, all of the execution of that app store. But, you know, the big thing is it's feeless. We don't want, you know, we don't want to make any money from, like, you know, in-app purchases or anything like that. Like, your relationship with your customer is yours. You can, you know, make money however you want. So that's and so again, it's a safe place for crypto apps. Not going to get rejected if you have any crypto functionality, right? So these, you put these three things together and you have a pretty good mobile ecosystem. You know, you have a pretty good set of operations that you can do. And it just, again, unlocks things that, you know, were maybe questionable before.
Interesting. So the Seed Vault gives you security. The mobile adapter gives you user experience, and the dApp Store gives you more and more apps to actually make use of the Solana mobile app.
So we're going to put it. I'm going to take that recording. what I will say too is that the mobile wallet adapter was designed to work on any Android phone, so it's not just Saga, right? It's just an Android library that allows Android apps to connect to Android wallets. So when you're on a Saga, your wallet can use the Seed Vault. When you're on your Samsung Galaxy, it'll use your wallet, and you know, your seed phrase is stored. However, your wallet is storing it, it's just less secure than the Seed Vault. And again, like, I'm not trying, like, these wallets are doing a great job of security. They know what they're doing, so I feel safe. I mean, I use wallets up until I have a Saga. I have a Galaxy S22, and, you know, I was using crypto wallets and feeling very safe about it. So yeah, like, the idea is that it's not just for Saga. It's just that, like, you know, the more crypto stuff you put in your app, the more likely it's not going to be approved by Google. We're also working on iOS support, but again, the big, you know, looming barrier is the App Store. So,
got it. I'm curious, like, do you guys have your own inbuilt wallet, or do you still recommend people to use MetaMask, Coinbase?
Yep. No, we're not building a wallet. We don't want to build a wallet. Okay. We're trying to let wallets do their wallet because we don't want to, because wallets are actually pretty complicated. you know, and a lot of things that you don't think about go into making a wallet. Like, Phantom talks about this a lot, right? Phantom was sort of like the first really good UX wallet on Solana. And a big part of what they do is spam and fraud detection. And we don't want to mess with that. We don't want to do that. So, again, like, you know, and we want to let people innovate on a wallet. Like, you know, there's a lot of potential for what wallets can be. And what's interesting too is that when you have your seed phrase securely stored on the device, what a wallet is can change, right? What you and I think of a wallet is actually a number of pieces of functionality that actually can be unbundled. So, like, a really good example of a launcher that's coming on Saga is a guy is making it's an Android app launcher. So, you know, like, when you go, I don't know if this is showing, but, like, when you go and, like, select your apps, right? That's what's called the launcher. And Android allows you to have a custom launcher. And so this launcher that he's making is, it integrates with he's not making it as a wallet, but you could, your launcher itself could be a wallet, right? He's just connecting with the SMS stack. But, like, what it's doing is, like, let's say you want to use an appless, right? Like, you're like, I'm just on Twitter way too much. You can actually use this launcher and say, like, if I use Twitter more than 5 times today, or block me for using Twitter if I use it up to 5 times. But if I try and use it that 6th time, make me donate 1 soul to a charity before I open Twitter. So you can kind of choose, right? Like, okay, well, I've opened Twitter 5 times, I'm addicted, and I'm trying to open that 6th time. Do I want to donate money to a charity or not before I open Twitter? Right? Like, these are things just aren't possible, like, you know, without crypto having a deeper integration into you know, the operating system. And just like
That's a really interesting use case. Yeah. I'm curious, like, you actually mentioned this, that what do you think about wallet today can be actually unbundled into different things. I'm curious, like, what are those different things for you?
Well, think about, you know, what your wallet is today. It's probably a place where you see your balances, where you can sign transactions, right? And where you manage your NFTs, right? And so, you know, the key functionality of a wallet, if I would argue, is transaction signing, right? So signing transactions for dApps, right? Well, you know, one of the things that's happening or that we're seeing a lot of conversation around on with the SMS stack is like right now, if you connect on an on-device dApp to an on-device wallet, you leave your app entirely. You hop from your app into the wallet. That is not a good user experience. Because, you know, the idea is like, you want people to spend time in your app. You don't want them to leave, you know? And now we're basically saying like, oh, you're going to leave the app when you sign a transaction. But there are other options. There are other options for signing transactions, or there are other UI paradigms. So a good example is people are actually used to hopping into other apps for making payments on mobile. They just don't know it. The example or the case I'm talking about is Google Play Billing. When you make a purchase with Google Play Billing, it's sort of doing this modal pop-up. And as I understand it, it's actually a completely different app that you're sort of talking to, because Google Play Billing is its own thing, or at least it's its other own screen. But it doesn't make you leave your app. It just is this bottom sheet, if you will, right, that kind of pops up. So you could imagine a world where there's a wallet that's sort of just a transaction signing wallet. It just signs transactions, and it's a bottom sheet. So you're in your favorite, you know, crypto dApp, and you want to make a purchase on your phone. And so instead of hopping over, leaving your app, a little bottom sheet just comes up and it allows you to sign your transaction, right? And that's all the wallet is. That's it. It just signs transactions. You can do that now, right? Like there's no reason, because somebody else can provide you your crypto balances, right? Crypto balance app, right? And then someone else can make an NFT exclusive app that does NFT management. If every one of these apps can sort of like get access to connections to your crypto functionality, then you can make these parts their own experiences.
Definitely way better user experience. So I'm curious, yep. Like, will that be from Coinbase or MetaMask? Like user would be like, okay, my default app on Solana Mobile on Saga is MetaMask. So whenever I have to sign a transaction in app, open the bottom sheet for MetaMask. Yep. Is that how it would work?
That's exactly how it would work. Yep. Yeah. And it's done through in Android. There's this, this concept, like it was called an intent. It's a way for apps to talk to each other. And so these intents kind of get broadcast like, hey, I'm looking for a crypto wallet. Somebody respond. And then any number of crypto wallets say, yep, I'm a crypto wallet. And then you pick the one you want. You do it for like your browser. It's the same thing you do for like your default browser or your default email client, things like that.
Interesting. Let's dive more into user experience. I'm curious that once a user comes in, and this question is very specific to the adapter, because you explain how the adapter works on the web. I'm curious to understand that, how will it work for the apps? So now let's say we talk about Converse. The seed phrase isn't stored within the app, but it's stored in the seed vault on Saga. Mm-hmm. And when you come in, you download Converse, you sign it, the bottom sheet pops up, you sign the transaction, and you're in.
Yep.
This is it.
Yep. That's it. And so the model is actually like OAuth on device. So what happens is you in effect, your app authenticates with the wallet saying, hey, I'm a crypto app and I'm going to be requesting transactions. And so then the wallet ends up giving you an auth token that says, the user has said, yes, I want them to be able to use this app. And so then anytime you want to do a transaction, like say in Converse, you would then sort of initiate new contact with the wallet and say, hey, the user is going to, I'm sorry, I don't know what transactions it does, but like maybe like if you're going to send some crypto within the chat app or whatever, you would sort of send a message to the wallet and say, hey, I want to initiate this transaction. Here's my auth token. Let me do this. And then it would be your app, Converse, would be responsible for constructing those transaction bytes and then sending them to the wallet. And then on non-Saga devices, the wallet would sign those bytes in software. And on Saga, it would be signed in the seed vault.
Very interesting. Yeah. I'm really curious to understand the security aspect over here. How does the app, the dApp, use or leverage the seed phrase without storing the seed phrase? Because the seed phrase is stored by seed vault.
Yeah, it doesn't. That's the kicker. It doesn't. It does take a bit to wrap your head around, right? But like ultimately, like, you know, with like an app like Converse, like your identity is sort of tied to your address, right? And so you need to have a way to validate that I own this address, right? Like, so if I'm connecting it with my main MetaMask address, I need a way. Or let's just say Solana, because I know this exists in Solana. I don't know if exactly. Actually, it kind of does. There is deep linking in MetaMask. I know it exists, but I haven't used it. So let's just say it's MetaMask. So like, you know, what you do is you say, Let me back up. Let me tell you about the way I know it works. Let's do this because I don't want to say something inaccurate. On what happens on Solana is what you do is or with the mobile wallet adapter is you say, connect me to this wallet. And when you connect to the wallet says, you know, you have to first be asked, like, do you want to connect to this app? It's just like when you connect to an app for the first time on web, right? Like the wallet comes up and says, hey, you know, Converse is trying to connect. Do you want to let it? You say, yes. User says, I want Converse to talk to Phantom because Phantom's cross-chain now. Phantom hands back an auth token and an address. And there's actually quite a bit you can do with just an address. Any read operation, all you need is an address. So like getting a list of chats, for example, right? So I assume Converse has some way of querying on-chain things for this address, give me all the chats that exist, right? Now, you might want to ensure that the user owns that address, right? So like you're going to connect to Phantom and it's going to give you address. You don't really know if the user owns that. That's where assigning just a message of bytes comes in. And so for that, you would construct the transaction in app. So the transaction is built in your app. And you know, there's lots of ways to do that. There are Java ways to do that. There are Kotlin ways to do that. There are JavaScript or like React Native ways to do that. You build the transaction itself. And this would happen even if you were managing the seed phrase yourself. Like ultimately your app is responsible for building transactions because that's what makes things register on the blockchain. So in this case, you would build a transaction in your app. And then again, you would say, hey, Phantom, sign these transaction bytes. And then Phantom would, it's a black box. You don't really know what Phantom's doing to sign the bytes. All you're doing is say, Phantom, sign these bytes, send the signed bytes back to me. Then it does. And then now you know that the user owns that account and you can keep on going.
Very interesting. All right. Yeah. I got it.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to use this phone. And let's talk about the launch.
Yeah.
When did the launch start? And how many, if you can talk about it, how many sagas have been out in the market so far?
Yes. So the launch event was April 13th. We announced the phone that it was coming in June of last year. That was my first week at Solana. And then, we were big on pre-orders. We wanted to get people pre-ordering. And so we had an NFT mint for this, what we called the Saga Pass. And if you pre-ordered the phone and put down $100, you'd get the Saga Pass. And we did some sort of NFT drops to Saga Pass holders, that sort of thing. And so it was Saga Pass owners that had first dibs at buying the phone. So we launched it on April 13th, and that was not long ago, but my memory is already, I'm pretty sure we opened up purchasing the phone that day, but it was only for Saga Pass owners. So you had to have a Saga Pass. It is not open to the public yet. That's actually not happening until May 8th. On May 8th, anyone can order the phone. And the only numbers or the only thing that we have publicly stated, I believe, is that the first, so they're coming in waves, they're coming in batches. Like that's just the way manufacturing works. We sold out of the first batch. So I don't think we've said what those numbers are. I'm not even sure what those numbers are. But we sold out for the first batch. So that's promising.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then now, like, I believe I hope I'm not misspeaking here. I think we got more orders than we had in the batch. So like the first batch is going out. So you're seeing on Twitter, people are posting photos of their box when they get their box. And I think as more batches come in, more will go out. And then again, May 8th, it opens up to everybody, but there's probably going to be a backlog for a little while for people to get the phone.
Yeah, definitely. Did the NFT holders got a cheaper price? I see the price right now is listed as 1,000.
Yes. They just pre-ordered. So they only had to pay the remaining 900.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was, and the NFT drop, they got dropped these, playing cards. And, those playing cards actually gave you, if you had a certain hand of the playing card, you got a discount off of the phone.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So, the max discount was like $100 or something like that.
Very interesting. It's so cool to see that we kind of thought like every single year, whenever Apple comes with the phone, people are like, hey, what is Apple going to do next? Like we have already reached the max potential of a phone. And it's really cool to see now that there is a step function change in how a phone could be built.
Yes.
So this is really cool. And is there something that we need to talk about that we haven't talked about yet?
From a platform perspective, I don't think so. I think we've covered all the salient points.
Right. Perfect. Thank you so much, Andrew. This was a really cool conversation. I don't even see. I'm like, wait, it's just been 40 minutes for us talking.
I know.
Learned so much right now.
We could talk about app ideas if you want. Like that's something I really like talking about is app
ideas.
Yeah. Okay. So you know, what's interesting is like once you live in a world where, you know, crypto apps are allowed. You know, crypto is sort of natively integrated into these apps. It's fun to actually start thinking about what you can do. And so, like, just even chat apps alone, like, I was thinking about this, and like, there's so much potential there. So it's really cool to see, you know, Web3 messaging coming. I think, is Shane the CEO of Converse or XMTP?
Shane is the CEO of XMTP. And Converse is a partner, which is being built by Paul in Paul and Noé in France.
Okay, cool. So I remember, I think it was a podcast with him that I was listening to that sort of got me connected to your whole ecosystem. It was such a really cool interview. And I remember one of the things he talked about was this idea of like, if somebody wants to message you, they have to pay you, you know, like, even something as simple as that, right? Like, that's just not possible on Google Play. Like, it's, or Apple, it's just not possible. But if I have a wallet and you have a wallet, you know, it's like, for me, what I would, like, I would love, like, there's probably weird, like, conflict of interest things, but it's like, you know, you get hit up by, like, recruiters. It's like, wouldn't it be, what I would like is, like, if a recruiter wants to reach out to you, it's like, they have to pay you, but actually maybe it, like, goes to charity or something, right? So stuff like that. I think there's huge potential. Like, chat-based apps should not be minimized in terms of their potential. In other locales, I think chat-based apps are very, very are big. I think they had maybe a boom a little while ago, but like, you know, now with AI, right, and ChatGPT, there's probably a whole slew of just text-based apps that can be written, right? But, you know, like, what would be really cool is like, let's say there's like a knowledge base, or, you know, just like there's some service, some AI service that want to interact with or know more about. What would be really cool is like a per use chat interaction. So like, I just open up my chat with whatever bot, right? And I pay it 10 cents and now I can use it for today or for an hour, right? And then the chat closes because it's run out of money. So it's like enabling microtransactions to enable just in chat app. So any chat app could do this, right? Like any chat app could have this AI chat bot and then games. Like one game that I would love to see is a chat-based game where like it's AI, and every session it generates a new murder mystery that you have to solve by talking to the characters. Like, imagine that. So you open up the chat and it's like, this is murder mystery bot. And it's like, it'll be 50 cents to play. You pay your 50 cents. And now it's constructed a murder mystery. There's like five characters and you're asking them, you're interacting with AI characters to solve this mystery. Like, that would be so fun, you know? Like, so yeah, just even that, like just chat as a platform with micropayment enabled experiences, there's huge potential, right? So
this idea is really cool. I'm also thinking about what if there could be a prize pool that every single day, let's say 100 people joined, 100 people signed up to play this game, everybody pays $1.
Yeah.
So there's $100 in the pool, and the person who solves the first that day, they get $100 or whatever, they get $50.
Yeah.
$50 goes to the game.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and you've seen that, like, what was it? What was the first big pool lottery site? I'm forgetting the name, but it's been around for a while. And so I'm pretty sure it's on Ethereum. I'm forgetting the name, but there's one on something called Pool Party. It's that exact same idea where the funds go in and everybody contributes to the pool. Someone wins. And then like you get your money back, because what's actually paying out the pool is the DeFi interest, you know? Things like that, you know, like a chatbot, a daily chatbot where you can, again, I feel like crypto can empower philanthropy in amazing ways. And so like, imagine if there was a chatbot where every day it's like, hey, the nonprofit of the day is this, would you like to donate $1? Yes, I would. Boom, done. You know, stuff like that. Like just, you know, so cool. So cool. So, you know, those are some of the things that, you know, that I think about just in general, like microtransactions, you know, on Solana, there's no reason you couldn't sell something for 10 cents, because the transaction fee is, you know, 0.0005 cents or something like that. So, you know, selling in-app experiences for cents on the dollar or just cents. You know, I think a lot about like, there's you know, like play to earn is kind of a played out and risky proposition, but I think there are valid, like what I like to call X to earn opportunities, on with crypto. So like, you know, an example would be, your phone can collect any amount of data, right? On the go in real time. It's gotta be valuable to somebody for something, right? So why not have an app where you opt in to sharing some data that's on your phone and get paid for it in, you know, in small, in small doses. It's kind of like the DPIN, you know, the decentralized physical, like the just decentralized sort of data aggregation, or getting paid to contribute to AI models, right? Like take a picture a day of XYZ, upload it for an AI, Midjourney, whatever, and get a few cents, right? Things like that.
Very interesting. I really like these ideas, especially pay to message, because this is something that is being worked on a lot, right? It's like, hey, if you're Bill Gates, today, there's no way for you to limit your access or monetize your access, because if you have an Instagram profile, your DMs are going to be flooded. If you have a Twitter profile, your DMs are going to be flooded. But what you can do in the Web3 world is you can be like, hey, my time is worth $1,000.
Yeah.
My 1 hour is worth $1,000. If you pay me $1,000, only then you can cold message me. That's it. It's a simple demand and supply curve then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. And really, I mean, it's easy to forget, or maybe not forget, but like it just sort of, messaging is quote unquote unsexy, you know, like it's not these hot flashy experiences, but like it is a core component of the mobile system, you know, the mobile experience. And any one of us, I guarantee any regular mobile user is opening one or more chat apps multiple times a day among the other apps that they're using. Right. So it's like, it's a huge surface for opportunity, you know, and it's like meeting people where they're at in those experiences. It just reduces barriers. You know, they don't have to go download an app or whatever, you know.
Definitely. And also with microtransactions, this is something we've been talking a lot about, nano payments, micro payments, stuff like that. But the biggest problem, the biggest hurdle is the fact that, hey, but Apple takes 30% cut, but Apple won't allow you to pay like $1. The minimum payment has to be $5 or something.
Yep.
So it's crazy. And now we are also seeing Superfluid. Superfluid is allowing you to stream per second, stream money per second, stream your salary per second.
Yes.
That is crazy.
Yes. Yeah. You know, you think about like, again, like this idea of doing X to earn. It's like, you know, what if GPS, for some reason, like GPS data of like traveling or whatever was valuable? You could literally go into the app, turn it on, start doing the things, and the funds are just being streamed into your wallet as you do the activity. It's like, it's crazy. You know, it's like, that's just is impossible with other payment rails.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have more ideas?
Oh, I could keep going for a long time. I mean, I think we have to say games. We have to talk, you know, we just have to bring up games. Because that is going to be a way where people talk a lot about this, but onboarding, like this idea of digital asset ownership, you know, that's going to be, you know, huge. So, you know, in-game, you know, assets that you can then sell, leveling up game characters. One thing that nobody has done yet that I want to see, and this isn't maybe the most relevant on mobile, but could be on mobile, isn't like a save game marketplace. So like, you know, I don't want to spend however many hours it takes to get to whatever level in World of Warcraft, right? But somebody else is willing to do that. So what if they could sell their save game in like a legitimate way, right? Like not like, you know, right now I think people sell like World of Warcraft accounts, but like, you know, it's not officially sanctioned. What if there was a, you know, sort of a standard, a platform? What if your save game was an NFT? So, you know, like you spend X amount of time in a game and therefore your save game becomes valuable. And when you decide you're done playing the game, you sell it to somebody who doesn't want to take all that time, right? Like it's a no brainer. You know, there's some logistics around that that make it, you know, like challenging or whatever games that, you know, but the concept is there, right? It's no different than, you know, any other NFT. So like, I really hope somebody makes that.
That's really cool. Yeah. Gaming is something where you find users who are really dedicated and who are really, especially in Web3 world as well, we want to find those users who are very, let's say, power users who are going to be using the product regularly so that you can generate a lot of feedback and you can also keep improving the product. So that's a great avenue where I'm seeing that people are like, hey, how to increase Web3 adoption? Go build a good game.
Yep. Give people fun, you know? And I would say specifically, do not make a play to earn game. I think that is a bad idea. I think play to earn on its face is a bad idea because like people will spend, it mixes incentives is what it comes down to, because like people already spend hundreds, thousands of hours of a game with no financial incentive at all. It's just fun. Gaming already has plenty of incentives. It's called fun. Make something fun, people will come. And out of that will emerge an economy of things, right? If something is fun, it is valuable. If it is valuable, you can build an economy around it. Done. Figure it out from there. Don't try and trick people and be like, oh, you can make money playing this game. It's like, I've never seen a player in game that isn't Ponzinomics, but you know, some people like that. I would rather see better things.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Make sure that your product offers fun. People will come.
Yeah, exactly. GameFi exists. It's called buying games and buying assets for games. So just start with that.
That's good. That's good. All right, Andrew, this was really good. Thank you so much for hopping on the